Baggies fans, welcome to the latest episode of the Baggies broadcast. My name is Johnny Drury and I am here alongside Lewis Cox in the, what should we call it, the Baggies away day Nissan Juke? I don't
on the M1, we shall call it JD Taxi Services. That's my superb lift to and from, although we're not quite home yet, are we? What are we at? 1:15 a.m. What's your ETA home? 3:30? Bit earlier for me. So we shall entertain ourselves at least, and hopefully some listeners, with another one of these transit podcasts.
We will do. This is probably our second or third one of the season. And yeah, we've got busy schedules this week. Albion have played midweek, so we're going to be recording on our way back from Albion's 2-2 draw against QPR. A pretty tough 2-2 draw. We're going to talk about everything from Loftus Road. We're going to have a little bit of a chat about Shilin Patel, because since the last time me and Coxie did a podcast, it's been signed, sealed and delivered. And we're going to answer all your Baggies questions, and we've got plenty of those.
Should we also explain that this is hands-free and perfectly legal as ever, just to you know, we've had a couple of how are you doing this, and obviously I'm in the driver's seat with JD's taxis at the wheel of JD's taxi, and I'm in control of the device, and Johnny is hosting from the wheel, which is a great effort. I'm sure you'll agree.
Yeah, hands are firmly on the wheel, eyes are forward, not even looking at Coxie. And yeah, he'll be asking answering all the questions. But it's a return today, Coxie. You've been off for a couple of weeks. We roped in the main man, Andy Johnson, who came in. We had a bit of a laugh. You were at a pool party in Jamaica. He told us he was at a pool party in Worcester. And yeah, he gives you a lot of stick, doesn't he? But he's done us a solid and stepped in. I think he was a bit
jealous.
Bit put out, really, when he spoke to us tonight. I think he was hoping for a permanent gig, but he's our man to go to. He's a good lad. He took up his time. I will give a little bit of an insight for the Baggies broadcast listeners. On the first podcast I did with Andy Johnson a couple of weeks ago, he had a little glass of scotch as he was doing the podcast. And then last week he was doing it in a dressing gown.
Wow.
For all them female listeners who maybe lusted over AJ during his playing days, just a little bit of a glimpse there for you. But yeah, that shows the lengths he goes to help us out here at the Express and Star and the Baggies broadcast. But yeah,
more sense after the scotch, would you say?
He's pretty good. Pretty good analyst, to be fair. He'd be giving Neville and Carragher a bit of a run for their money on Monday Night Football.
Well, the listeners will be switching off as soon as they heard my voice at the top of the show, and you know, didn't hear his permanent return. So I'm sorry, AJ. I'm sorry, listeners. But here we are. Perhaps I'm cheaper, eh, Johnny? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, no, give us time up for free, AJ. Done us a solid. So, are you all back this week? How was your holiday, mate?
Nice, thanks. Yeah, good to be back. Obviously, I was back for Cov home last Friday. Yeah, break was great, mate. Yeah, some winter sun is never a bad thing, is it? And I was following you from afar, mate, as I know you shouted out during one of the away games on social media, didn't you? I think it was Plymouth, I think. It would have been. Cracking couple of, well, four points while I was away, wasn't it, Plymouth and Hull? And I think we'd have taken that return from those. We'll get onto it at some point, but the away form, which has been probably patchy at best this season, seems to have turned a little bit of a corner. I mean, including tonight, I would say. But yeah, good return that was, wasn't it? I think the point at Hull was so important, them being a big rival, I really do. And, as we discussed on Friday night, really, the home win over Cov, another rival, you'd have to say, at that end of the table, was a massive result, wasn't it? Absolutely massive outcome. And yeah, not the 3 points we'd have wanted tonight, eh? But a crucial one, at least, I would say, and gained on rivals. I mean, gained on Hull, gained on Norwich, who've dropped points over the last day or so. And yeah, happy to be back, mate. I don't like, to be honest, in this gig and previous gigs of this nature, other clubs I've covered, I think it goes for any reporter as well. You'll be the same, albeit you do slightly different roles. You never want to miss games. It's not in our interest, in our roles, to miss games, really. But obviously, also, we can't sort of shape life and annual leave and stuff when it comes to going away with partners and family and all that around the football. Like, it's just, you know, the football season and so on, and all annual leave in the summer, like how teachers do and stuff like that. So They have to get away. We do. Things come up, don't they? I've got another couple of games this season that I can't make, haven't I? I'm ditching you again, Johnny. So, just nodding his head. Solo trip to Millwall for one, isn't it, I believe?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it. You can butter it up every which way you want, Coxie. You're missing Plymouth away, Hull away, Millwall away.
Stoke
away. You know, don't tell me you didn't look at the fixture list, you know, when you bought these, but no, in truth. Good to have you back, Parker.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, well, the away form did all right without me, didn't it? So, yeah, hoping for good returns from Millwall and Stoke. But, yeah, I mean, we can get on tonight now, I suppose. I don't know where you want to start.
Yeah, we'll start. I know there's probably the negative Albion fans who will look at it and say Albion run to par, which I thought they were at times, and I thought that Albion maybe let QPR control the game a little bit. But I just want to, it's something I referenced after Southampton. I think it's something I also referenced at Hull with the Fabio Carvalho goal, where Albion fans were taking aim at Palmer, but I thought it was an unbelievable strike. And I think it was again tonight. I think Queen's Park Rangers are probably in a false position due to the fact they were so bad under Gareth Ainsworth, and then the new manager's come in and they've just been completely different. He's implemented his ideas, and I think it maybe took Albion fans a little bit by surprise. It certainly took me by surprise how well QPR played. So I think you have to take into consideration maybe the opposition a little bit, and I think the fact that Albion were probably a little bit under par, you know, and you've just got to be happy to get out of there with a point at the end of the day. Because it, you know, like Albion, as some Albion fans might have seen, I wrote a little bit of an analytical piece after the game, and under Bruce and under Val, Albion lost there under Val in similar circumstances, not the same scoreline. I think they lost 1-0. I think Charlie Austin scored late on, but they just succumbed to some late pressure, and they didn't do that tonight, you know, or yesterday. It's 1:20 now, but yeah, granted, there was a lot of, you know, they had a lot of luck. Albion need a lot of luck, but things have gone against Albion this season, and they went for him tonight, and it's just one of them. You get out with a point, but I do think you have to take into consideration the opposition, because QPR played well tonight and they're a side on the up.
Yeah, well, a lot of luck might be an understatement of the season there, Johnny. We'll obviously get into that, you know, one of the main talking points of the game at Loftus Road, which, I mean, just quickly, I thought it was an absolute bonkers game. Like, I really did. I thoroughly enjoyed it, really. Not necessarily from an Albion doing really well perspective, because I agree with you. Well, I'd go a bit further than you, actually. I thought Albion were quite far below par tonight. I thought they were quite poor, quite disjointed, didn't offer anywhere near enough in attack, to be honest. Probably reasons and justifications for that. But I fully agree with you in that, and I think Carlos Corbrand does as well, by the way, from what he said in interviews before and after. QPR totally in a false position, given how they're playing, for the most part, under this new manager who came in at the end of October. Had two very good runs under him now, and one defeat in nine for them now with five wins, three wins in a row before, you know, the clash last night, beat Leicester on Saturday away. You know, they've clearly got something going. It was very impressive, actually, and the way they played, I agree with you, really impressed me. Front-footed. It was a night of emotion, wasn't it, in Loftus Road, you know, remembering Stan Bowles, and there was a lot going on, and just got the feeling that sort of the wind might be in the sails of the hosts. And I think Albion started okay for a few minutes. I agree with Corbrand there, but for me, QPR quickly got in control, and a lot of it, I thought, owed to Albion's slightly unusual wastefulness with the ball. I think we saw Okai and Mowat in that midfield, usually so reliable with the ball, aren't we? I mean, we were only the other day talking about that Mowat 97% pass completion, outrageous stat in the Coventry game, and the two of them in midfield just couldn't keep it as well tonight, could they? And whether that was QPR's pressing or whatever, but Albion just couldn't seem to break clear, could they? And we'll get onto the goals. Obviously, the 4-1 nil down to another interesting part of the night. Sam Field firing a brace and should have having a hat-trick, you know, former academy kid, obviously, and academy graduate of Albion's, but falling behind. And let's be honest, Albion were going nowhere and hadn't showed anything for me the other side of the halfway line until an absolutely wonderful equaliser from Magic Mikey Johnson. And wow, he really is making a name for himself south of the border, isn't he?
He certainly is. Just before we come on to that, we'll talk about the QPR goal, really, because
yeah,
we thought the first goal was a bit uncharacteristic from Albion, a bit of sort of calamity of errors, and I know a few fans have been pointing the finger at Alex Palmer lately for more for his distribution more than anything else, and I think those questions are valid, and I think there was question marks out tonight. I thought it was just a really uncharacteristic mistake. It wasn't really a fumble, it was a bit of a spill into the path of Michael Frey, and
it bounced, didn't it, not long before Palmer, and it looked like it might be a tricky one to hold.
Yeah, it was one of them, but I think it was one he probably expected to hold, and he probably expects to do better himself. But yeah, I thought it was a difficult one, really, and a poor goal, an un-Albion like goal to concede.
Yeah. However, I mean, not that it was coming, but they're in the ascendancy, weren't they? They'd had a couple of moments. I think Palmer had saved from chair. There's another cross that had just evaded the keeper. So it wasn't a big surprise for me. I thought, to say they had the ascendancy, they seemed on the front foot, had most of the ball. As I said just now, Albion seemed to struggle to keep it. So can't say I was massively shocked when Albion fell behind. And then to me, it was a real sort of, now let's see where maybe the progression away from home is, where these sort of newfound options maybe that Corberan has now to help the away form, where they can go, how they can help tonight, because the QPR are flying. They're at home, buoyed by, you know, it was good atmosphere, wasn't it, and that home fans say tails up because of their form, how they'd started the game. For me, I don't know if you agree, Albion showed next to nothing in the first 20 minutes, so where's an equaliser going to come from? What can Albion show? And well, as I touched on just now, it came out of very little, but it was quite something, wasn't it? And then, well, 120 seconds later, we'd gone from 1-0 down thinking, where on earth is tonight going to go? Where's it going to come from? To, you know, we blink and, Christ, Albion are 2-1 up here. How has this happened type thing? It was a surreal few minutes, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly was. We'll talk about Mikey Johnston's goal. I think he brings something to Albion which we haven't had for a very, very long time. You could say maybe Mateus Pereira or someone of that ilk, but in terms of a winger and someone like that who can just flip a game and it come literally out of nothing, and to take on a shot, you know, there's not many players, probably not many players in the division who would take on an effort like that to beat the keeper at his near post. It was a fantastic strike, and I think he's been absolutely superb this season, absolutely superb, and well, since January, since he arrived, and he's just got something that Albion have lacked for quite a while, certainly since they've been back in the Championship, and he's just, I think keeping him fit is going to be really, really key, because he's come in, and you've seen straight away, Carlos has gone with him as one of his main wingers from the off, and yeah, he's just got something very, very special. And, you know, there was a lot of negative words from Celtic fans prior to his arrival, and he probably hadn't done it for a while at Celtic. But, you know, the Championship is a bigger league, is a better league than the SPL, and he's still managing to, you know, to turn it on and do that. And, yeah, just fantastic. He's quality. He's got to be one of the most informed attacking players in the league at the moment.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you said about he's got that something that maybe Albion haven't seen for a while. I just think he's got that magic in him, which is a bit of a
I thought you were
going
to say X factor.
No, but I was going to say a bit of stardust, actually, which when I say magic, I'm a huge fan of his. I was speaking to several people before he joined. I know we broke the tale that he was a target, and that he was Carlos Corberan's number one target, and that he was set to sign. Obviously spoke to a good few people about him, read all about his injuries, in and out of the side at Celtic, been on loan in Portugal. But what I quickly heard is this is a talented lad, right? You know, he's come through at Celtic, young, played quite a bit of football, but, you know, over 4 or 5 seasons, really. Had some of it broken by injury, but you could see from clips, you know, and talk about how much we rate SPL and all of that, but you could see from clips his actual ability, being direct, being skillful. Well, I would say, and I'm a huge fan, I don't think he's necessarily, from what I've seen so far, maybe the cleanest. Like, you'll see the odd touch bounce away from him, or the odd pass not come off, but he's trying things at least, and I think certainly a confidence player, certainly a form player, and once the things are happening for him, like the first, obviously he scored his first goal, was it Cardiff, that goal right at the start of the game at the Hawthorns, which was a bit of a tapping by his standards, wasn't it? But once that worldie happens at Plymouth, that obviously you were there down in Devon for that. He, that momentum player, that form and confidence player, that he's going to try it and he's got the confidence that it's going to come off. And I think you mentioned keeping him sort of fit and available, but also keeping him in this mood of form, in this confidence. That comes down to Carlos's man management as well, I think. You know, how often do you keep him in a starting 11, things like that? Obviously you've got international break coming, but look, I don't think he was dominant or anything tonight, but like I said, that moment of magic from 20-25 yards into the other top corner, it grazed the angle of post and bar, didn't it? Absolutely unsavable. Just, I think, left everyone around us just like sort of gasping for air, really, didn't it? It's just, how can he keep doing it? You know, can he keep doing it? I mean, it opens up so many questions about his future from the summer, doesn't it? You know, and what's next for him? He's certainly going to be catching the eye of clubs south of the border as well as his parent club. I spoke to Carlos Corberan about him again after the game, because it's hard not to at the moment, obviously. And in, as he kind of has to me before, he just looked and said, yeah, this is why he was my top target. This is why I told you he was my number one target. He's got this quality. He can play wide, play inside, unlock defences with moments of magic, and he rates him very highly. And we're going to discuss later on, aren't we? I think within the question segment, maybe Albion's position in the table, playoff, you know, how many points and secure top six and all that. But I think even at this early March stage, I think it's fair to say that Mikey Johnson's arrival in January has breathed new life into Albion's push for the top six, I would say, and been really crucial actually in going again in this second part of the season and ultimately hopefully getting over the line.
Yeah, don't fall in love with a lone player as well.
That's, yeah, that rings a bell. Yeah.
Yeah. Other points, the second goal, you know, top touch, great finish from Grady Dingana, but I thought even tonight, yeah, Tom Fellows was pretty quiet tonight. I thought QPR kept him quiet, didn't have an awful lot, had a couple of runs at the fullback, but his one goal, you know, Jed Wallace joked on Sky about this, you know, this deft sort of step over that he produced against Coventry, that he produces on a regular basis. But I thought, even though he was quiet tonight and it wasn't his best game, he's produced a cross where he's beaten his man, and it isn't just an aimless cross into the box. He's pulled it back. He's seen that Grady Dingana was there. And I thought he played really well. We'll come on to next. The penalty, I thought it was pretty harsh. Handball decision against Adam Reach. I kind of think, what else can he do there? Some fans will have their opinions on that. I'm sure QPR fans will totally disagree with me. But I just thought, I questioned it, and I heard a couple of journalists sniggering behind me in the press box, but I didn't think it was that. But I want to talk about another handball incident. The hand of Sed, the hand of Kip, looked like an unbelievable back header over the bar from Cedric Kipre to keep out Samfield. And then on second glance, we were like, that's handball. But I don't think he means it, because he's looking the other way. And then you almost see his hand just sort of rise up like Maradona's in the 86 World Cup. And I think he kind of looks like he meant it. And I'm not trying to speak for Cedric Kipre. He might not have meant it. But it looked like he meant it. And Albion really got away with one there. But rather than talking about the incident, because it's pretty self-explanatory, you know, the QPR manager made a quote after the game saying that Albion had two goalkeepers on at one point. But it swings them roundabouts. He swings even themselves out. And we heard earlier in the season how Albion had a letter from whoever it was, you know, referees or the EFL, or saying that I can't remember how many incidents had been missed.
A good handful.
Yeah, that were wrong. And don't get me wrong, from a QPR perspective, it's hard to take, because if that doesn't happen, then they probably go on and win the game. But it's, you know, it swings them roundabouts. Albion have had decisions to go against them, and it's nice to see one go for them. And the fact that it's absolutely hilarious at the same time as well, it helps even more.
To be honest, you said that. I mean, live, it was such a weird moment. I was thinking...
And the referee couldn't make a decision either, because his hand was sort of the other side of his head, if that makes sense.
There were no appeals. No home player saw it. It was that well disguised. I don't think... It was right in front of the home fans behind that goal, wasn't it? And I didn't sense much of an appeal from behind the goal. There was no sort of noise of it until replay started sort of sifting through from Sky. My initial feeling live, we all know, including those listening, that my eyes don't work very well, but was almost like it must have been a Palmer save. Like, you know, and some suggestions to me that Palmer might have got a little tiny flick before Kipra, but he doesn't, the keeper. He's well beaten by that classy field header, really. And there's even, you know, some members of the press behind us were like, he's not handballed that, he's headed that over. And once you really get the zoomed in replays and slowed down, you can sort of clearly see, as you say, that his hand's sort of up next to slash near his head, isn't he? And it's quite hard to tell, but I agree. I mean, Carlos Corban said, Johnny, that these things, said after the game, these things, you know, sort of compensate themselves. What he means is obviously even themselves out. He referenced Southampton away, which is back in November. I mean, you kind of have to really think back to that, don't you? But I do recall there being quite a telling incident in that game that he was extremely unhappy with. But that you're right, there have been others where Albion have been on the end of some rough justice, I think, from the officials, certainly in the early part of the season. There's a couple of comms from, as you say, the league bosses, the refereeing bosses, about things that had gone against them. So, yeah, swings and roundabouts, I agree. But it was a crazy one, wasn't it? And for me as well, it looked like, because the penalty had been saved seconds before Palmer from Fry, wasn't it? Good save for me. I don't think it was necessarily the best penalty in the world, but I still thought it was nearish to the corner. I'd have to see a replay, but you said to me it wasn't the strongest, most powerful penalty, was it? But Palmer's still gone the right way and got down to make the save, and you know, not his best for the first goal, as we touched on, sort of spilling it, but he's bounced back in style there, hasn't he, making the pen save. And with that, with the luck of obviously everyone missing the hand of said, don't get me wrong, that was before the hour. That all happened like on the 55th minute, sort of busy start to the second period. It was all going on. I think Steve Cook then headed one wide. Obviously, he had his bicycle cleared off the line by Furlong the end of the game. But from that kind of 55, 60 minutes until the goal came on 81 for 2-2, that's kind of 20 minutes. Yes, QPR had the ball, they were attacking. Albion couldn't really get out, if we're being honest. But I just wondered that, you know, the stars sort of aligning in this game. It's like the world's against QPR. Everything's going for Albion. Are they just going to, you know, even the Norwich result elsewhere, the lost at Borough, is it all coming together for Albion to happen? So when that second field goal goes in, scrappy, horrible one, wasn't it? But clearly QPR deserved it. And you just, it's a little bit sort of, a little bit disappointing, because you just thought, well, yeah, it looks like we might hold on here amid all of the sort of drama. Might get this 7-point gap to seventh. But obviously they fight one back at 2-2, and then the QPR tails are up, and it's like, well, are they gonna nick another one? And obviously Furlong heads off the line. So, that all told, given all the drama, all the sort of change of storyline, I mean, we'd definitely, as we said at the top, absolutely take the point, I think. I think QPR were by far the better team, the most dangerous team. And I mean, Carlos Corbrand's gone entirely along with all of that. And I mean, Baggies fans, by the time this podcast's out, Thursday morning, daytime, they'll be able to read some more from the Albion manager on the Express and Star website. And he's quite honest, to be honest. He's quite honest about how Albion just defended far too much in that game. Not through wanting to. You know, Corbrand's even said, you know, resisted putting to a back five quicker because he didn't want to just defend. He knew that, I think one of his quotes is, the best form of defence tonight would have been to attack. Like, wanted his players up there, higher up, but it just didn't, yeah, it didn't happen for, I think, probably technical reasons, not looking after the ball enough. Carl Bartley not being available, as we've reported, a new injury was a big blow. I think he would have started. I think the Connor Townsend factor at left back now, everyone's got a different opinion on Townsend, haven't they? They have, but Albion have no natural left back to replace him. And Carlos has effectively hinted that, you know, Reach and Pippa, starter and the sub, struggled really against QPR's right. And I think those are factors as well that played into QPR dominating the game, really, let's be honest. So I think as we're sort of heading back to the Midlands right now, I think we are reflecting. I think Albion fans tomorrow listening to this will be reflecting on a handy point, really, because I think there was one better side clearly tonight. And look, we're a point better off in the race above seventh, you know, better to that the magical line at the end of the season, which is now only 10 games away, Johnny.
It is indeed. It's absolutely flown by. Just before we move on to the advert for the Kettle and Toaster Man and your questions, let's talk about Shilin Patel. Since the last time we did that emergency podcast, it's been ratified. His deal to take over at the Hawthorns was confirmed last week. Takes the majority stake from Gouch and Lai, and he's probably overtaken Gouch and Lai in visits to watch Albion, because he was in the stands or in the director's box at Loftus Road alongside Mark Miles, the managing director, to watch Albion's game. Two games, no defeats. Tony Bonnerbaum did joke that if Albion lost tonight, they would have to ban Shilin Patel from the games. But yeah, good to see him there. Coxie, you know, very, a good sort of Twitter, social media footprint, whatever you want to call it, you know, by the Albion results, by the Albion women's results as well. And yeah, just good to see him there tonight, already taking a vested interest. We know he sat down with Carlos Corbrand, and I imagine he'll still be in the country for a day or two before he heads back to America. But just, yeah, all the noises continue to be correct from the new owner.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, really, Johnny. I know we haven't spoke on this on a podcast at least since the 24 hours before the Southampton game, wasn't it? The night we did an emergency one, didn't we? The night it was kind of agreed in principle and made public. So I couldn't agree with you anymore, really, in that all of the sounds prior to it being confirmed, all of the things you kind of read online about his values as a person, his family values, of his father and grandparents were all the kind of things you'd want to hear. But obviously, you never really know, do you? And since, I think all the comms he did with the club, the interview, you're right, the social media stuff, showing he cares by being here at games, but, you know, putting stuff out on social media, that is him. You know, that's not a team of people behind it, that is him being real, you know, a very real person. This is someone, by the way, who's followed intrinsically every Albion game and results since sort of showing his interest really September, October. So Carlos Corbrand was only saying tonight he's well aware of how the league and Albion and English football works because he's been on top of it for months. So every sound we hear, we continue hearing, just feels right, doesn't it? It feels, I've seen many Albion fans say this, and I think it myself. I mean, I wasn't doing this role at the start of Lai's tenure, but you know, Lai was around in the early weeks/months, wasn't he? Came to a couple games, was it, right at the start, and bought fans a drink, didn't he? Was that a home or an away game?
Well.
Yeah. And they're all sort of, it's all sort of early PR stuff, isn't it? That it's just in, want to make the right impression, do something like that to reward the fans at a game. And that's all well and good, and you know, everyone was sort of hopeful, optimistic about Lai around the back of that, I think. But even then, you know, from memory, reading other things, and obviously learned since, very little out there about Gouch and Lai was there back then, and background, who he is, what he does, all that kind of thing. Couldn't be more opposite with Patel, could he? And yes, you could say, well, in these early weeks of Shilin Patel, is he just at games? Is he just on social media to make a good immediate PR impact? I don't think that. This seems to me to be who he is, how much he cares, how much of an interest he's got. We know from reading stuff over the years of him that he's wanted to get into football, soccer, for a long time, invest in a club. Obviously had previous interest in Italian football, hasn't he? A little stake in Bologna, Italian outfit. So clearly has a passion for it. Clearly, look. At the heart of hearts, he's a businessman, an entrepreneur, and an investor, isn't he? He's there to oversee successful businesses, invest as he has done in West Bromwich Albion here. Every businessman, investor, I don't know, I don't want to speak for him, but he's in it to make money and improve things, aren't they? But it's not, yeah, I dare say this isn't just about the money, which, and by the way, we think he's got a historic institution of an English football club here for a good price. Let's have that right. We know they're not in a great position, and debts, all of that we know, but Albion aren't far off getting where they want to be, where they feel they should be, let's be honest. And yeah, the value of the club could quickly skyrocket and change, couldn't it? But it's not just, I don't think, about the financial side for him. I think it's about, and he spoke about it very clearly in his first interview, didn't he, about culture, about community, values of local people, the women's side, the academy that's the club's famed for, the say the foundation, all the parts, bringing a community together, big on that. It's been big on that in previous interviews and stuff. I think that's the real Shilin Patel, and hopefully as the weeks, months, years go by, we'll learn that more and more, and we'll get the chance to speak to him in interviews, hopefully on and off record, you know, hopefully all being well, not before long we'll have the chance to be in his presence, and pick his brains, and hopefully bring an interview to supporters, hopeful on that. So yeah, I'm really excited by it, and I think I've seen a lot of fans, pretty much the whole percentage of support or response I've seen on him is along those lines, really. I see things shared online and speak to people all the time where it's like, oh, it feels like we've got a good one here, it feels like we've got a proper one, and maybe let's not run before we can walk and get too carried away. Maybe there's a situations financially to sort, aren't there, a big summer coming up, what's his backing like, what financial possibilities does he have, things we still have to find out, really. And we won't find out, I dare say we won't find out his success as an Albion owner for years to come, will we? But the early signs and sounds, as you rightly say, Johnny, I don't think could look or sound much better at the moment.
No, they couldn't. Do you reckon we'll get a Netflix, you know, Disney documentary like the owners at the American Owners?
Oh, well, yeah. Who knows? You might get a cameo, Johnny. But let's focus on getting him on the Baggies broadcast first, eh? That's priority. Getting Shilin on the pod.
Yeah, let's try and get him on the Baggies broadcast. Just a shout out to our sponsor and the sponsor to all our podcasts here at the Express and Star. And the Shropshire Star. It is the Kettle and Toaster Man, your graded product specialist, who has a warehouse full of top products over at Thorns Road in Briley Hill. Superb brands, superb prices. You can get your hands on virtually anything there. If you want it, he's probably got it down at the Kettle and Toaster Man.
Are they open 24 hours, Johnny? We could make a stop on the way home at 2:30 a.m.
I need my bed, it's going to be a late one, but yeah, I've been down there before, and you should head down there too. Some fantastic, as we said, products, great prices. Head along to see the Kettle and Toaster Man. Kettleandtoasterman.co.uk. If you want to go down the store, have a look yourself, go to Thorns Road in Briley Hill. Right, Coxie, get on Twitter, get the questions out, pal. We'll read through as many of these as we can between now and the end of the podcast, which is probably going to be when I need some petrol, because I've got about 85 miles left.
That would be a good detour of the pod, yeah, if we just run out on the side of the motorway.
I need some fuel for the car, and I need some fuel for my belly because I'm starving. But we'll rattle through these questions now, and I know we've got plenty of good ones, so yeah, you're gonna have to read them out today. So
okay,
crack on, pal.
I'll try my best. I'll start with the first one that I saw come through, actually, from which I particularly enjoyed, Johnny, from Baggy Amsterdam, which I enjoyed. It was Mackie's or BK at the services.
Been stung a lot, mate, to be honest. We get, you know, this gets my goat. There's not many service stations on the roads that we travel on anyway that do like 24-hour, you know, Burger King and McDonald's. It's usually a yellow sticker butty from Waitrose or yeah, WH Smith or something. So we'll have to see what extortionate meal deal the garage that we stop at.
Yeah, with a use by date of like yesterday, with a last chance to eat or something. Yeah, you'd dice him with food poisoning. Yeah. So to answer your question, I wished either, but it doesn't look like it's happening at 2 a.m. So alas, we move on. What's this one? Apologies, Baggies fans. I'm going as I'm looking here. Question from Alex. Baggy Al.
Baggy Al, good lad, Baggy Al.
Yeah, okay, good stuff. He's asked, how realistic do you see our chances of winning the playoffs? If we make them, obviously. I'm going in with no expectations, as I worry about facing a Leeds over two legs, but I do feel on our day we could beat any team in this league in a one-off game. Emoji, hello Wembley, emoji. Well, talk about getting carried away. Let's go there, Johnny.
Love it, Baggy Al. To be honest, my honest opinion is that I think it probably suit Albion. So you're going to come up against, it's going to be, could be Ipswich, could be Southampton, could be Leeds, could be Hull. And I think what we see in them games is that Albion are very, very good at sitting in and defending and hitting on the break. And I think that'll be the case in probably both legs, you know, if Albion get in the playoffs, which I think they will. And I think against those sides, we've seen it. We saw it at Southampton away. You know, obviously we lost. It was a mistake from Connor Townsend for the goal, the second goal. But
yeah,
I thought
even game.
Yeah, it was an even game. I think Leeds, we saw against Leeds at home, we had chances. I know it was only 1-0 and it was a bit of a ten hat job towards the end, but I think we did very well there. Ipswich away as well, you know, they put us under pressure, and at home, and then Leicester at home as well. I think you saw we had chances and we probably could have nicked it, and then obviously at the end, you know, we know what happened in the fallout of them breaking and us going for it at the very end. So I'd be quietly confident going into the playoffs. And like you say there, you're going in with no expectations. If Albion go up against a Southampton, an Ipswich or a Leeds, you know, they're the favourites. The pressure's on them. The pressure's on Leeds and Southampton to go straight back up for the financial side of it. You know, I think if you look at Southampton, I think they took out an MSD loan when they were in the Premier League. You know, someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they did.
At some point, yeah.
So that, you know, they're going to have a high wage bill. They're going to want to get back at the first opportunity, because we've seen firsthand the sort of the fallout from that. You know, if you don't go up for 2 or 3 years, so I think they've probably got a good chance. You know, going in sort of not under the radar, but you know they are going to be the underdogs going into it.
Do you know what? I just add this quickly on this point. I was speaking to someone Monday about this. And Albion are likely to finish 5th or 6th, aren't they? They're highly unlikely to finish higher than that. So I believe I'm right in saying that would be the home leg first of the...
Sure.
I think it's... From who I was speaking to the other day, a learned friend. I think the home leg of the semi-final would be... The first leg, sorry, would be at home. And the second leg would be at the side that finished higher in the... You know, higher in the table. Third and fourth place side. So I think... That works for Albion in a way, because clearly we all know Albion are stronger at home. So it's, can we go and lock down that, you know, that lead, that one goal lead, maybe even two goal lead from the first leg where we're stronger, and give it a defensive, you know, masterclass. We've seen enough of them from Corbyn, haven't we, in the second leg away, which is clearly tougher against, you know, sides more comfortable at home in front of their own supporters. I think the first leg at the Hawthorns, if that is the case, which I'm pretty sure it is, could suit Albion actually. So that's another thing to be maybe optimistic about if and when the post-season action in May arrives. Johnny, just on that sort of question theme, we've had another similar-ish ones from Tom Hunt, who's messaged in saying, how many points do you think we need to secure the playoffs? Now, Albion are on to 60 points tonight after the clash at Loftus Road. 10 games left, so got 30 to play for, 5 home, 5 away. We know all about the home record. Half of that, 15, takes you to 75. It's around middle 70s usually, isn't it? What? How do you sort of see that?
Yeah, 75, 76. I think 74 got in last year or one of the years. And there's been even lower than that. I think there's been a 70 in there. You know, that's probably an anomaly, but...
You'd hope with mid-70s.
I think you're going 15, 16, you know, maybe... Come in 3 or 5 at home, draw the other two, and then maybe win away. And
one win
away, a couple of wins away. And you look at it, and you know, I hate the old phrase, oh, they're all tough games. They are all tough games, but you know, the majority of them Albion will expect to win, certainly the home games. And then you've got to go away to Sheffield Wednesday. You know, we've got to go away to Millwall, which is always a minging place to go. But yeah, I think 16, I think 75, 76. To be safe, but it could be less. It could be less.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think looking at the fixtures left, I mean, just very quickly, home games: Bristol City, Watford, Rotherham, Sunderland, and Preston on the final day. I think with Albion's home record, you've got to. I don't think we can realistically hope for four wins there, and you know, take 12 or 13 points from a poss of 15, and that'd all but get Albion there, wouldn't it? As five away games, if you can nick a win in one of those and draw one or a couple. I think Albion are going to be there, aren't they? I don't think that's a stretch to say that. I think they can really lean on this home record now in this home straight. We're in the running now, aren't we? There's no, you know, final 10 games. So I think a few reasons to be optimistic when you're looking ahead and looking to these final 10. The next one, I'll bring in one from Dean Flukes, regular
contributor.
Yeah, there you
still
go.
Won't come on the fan video after the game though. I need to get him tied down. He keeps flaking out on me. But, yeah.
Dean, Johnny's not very happy with you there, as you can hear. But he's asked, did we back off too early tonight? Turn negative as soon as we got the lead? With a question mark. So I think we've kind of touched on this, haven't we? Just quickly, I don't believe for a second it was intentional to do that. And there have been a few, more than a few occasions with Corbram where, you know, it's a regular thing at home, isn't it? Why are we so defensive, sitting off? And you know, every now and then it's put to the head coach, really. You know, this is what people are seeing. Why, you know, did you want to do it differently? And it's not really by design, he always tells us, which is interesting in itself. So you've got to look at it as, you know, other players, you know, in that circumstance not doing what they've been asked. Can they not do what they've been asked? And then the opposition as well.
Yeah, what I also think made it difficult and is kind of making it difficult in these types of games at the moment is the fact that Albion are playing without a striker.
Yeah.
Now, as hard as Jed Wallace is working up front, and I think his game is probably improving, you know, he's playing one up front. You know, he's not a striker, he's not a big target man. It's very difficult to drag Albion up the field, you know, unless they're going to break really, really quickly, which they can do at times. What I will say as well, I made an observation, I think I did it on Twitter or on our blog late on. Albion won two or three really dodgy free kicks when QPR were sort of coming forward, and the referee helped to almost ease the pressure on Albion. And then that in turn then led to a bit of Albion pressure. I think Wallace flicked one wide that was deflected wide from a swift cross, but I think that makes it difficult as well. I don't think it's a case of backing off. I think again it probably brings back to my point of sometimes you have to look at the opposition as well and praise the opposition and QPR. And I think the point you made, Cox, at the top of the podcast, it was probably quite key that it was a very, you could feel it was an emotive evening, you know, with the Stan Bowles tributes and stuff, and that does have a bit of an impact. And you know, I'm not saying it would have overawed Albion, but it probably put 2 or 3%, even up to that on QPR's game. So, no, I don't think they backed off, but yeah, it's just one of them evenings where you have to sort of take what happened and moved on.
Let's have it right as well. As we said just quickly, Albion's two goals, certainly the first, which in my opinion sparked the second goal, out of nowhere. I can't really think of a period in that game Albion were on top. Maybe the first 2 or 3 minutes, but that was it. You know, so
yeah, that's a positive you can take as well. You know, like it probably marries into that piece of analysis that I did after the game where Albion have, you know, how many times have we been, you know, in maybe even in the early stages under Corbran, you know, for example, one game that springs to mind is when we went to Hull on a Friday night last season and Albion were pretty woeful.
Yeah.
And how, you know, crying out for a moment of magic from Albion just to give them something to hold or to get back in the game. And prior to that, you know, I know I've mentioned Bruce and Val a lot tonight, but back in those days, how many times under Val where we've been like maybe 0-0, you know, the amount of 0-0s that we had where we'd have been like, I just want something to happen, and there was no one there to do it. And I think that's a positive we've got to look at tonight, is we've got a point here when probably we didn't deserve one. I don't think Albion probably didn't deserve a point tonight, but we've got one where we didn't deserve one. That's the sign of a side that can maybe go on and do something successful.
You make a good point there. That Hull away game you referenced Friday night, that was last March, so bang on 12 months actually. And memory serves, Rico come off the bench that night, young, which was a surprise, wasn't it? And probably a show of where the squad was at. And Albion didn't make anything happen that night, did they? So yeah, bang on with that point. Alan Love has tweeted in earlier. Yes, cheers Alan. He's said, we are playing half a dozen lower half teams next. Is this squad good enough to get near maximum points? So I mean, half a dozen, you sort of obviously reference six or so. It's Huddersfield, Bristol City, that's this side of the international break. Then it's Millwall, Watford, Stoke, Rotherham, pretty much. That's six before it then becomes Sunderland, Leicester. So, I mean, maximum points. Is this squad good enough to maximum or near maximum points? Possibly not. Possibly in that the injuries are telling. Like you've just referenced the centre-forward thing, Johnny. And yes, Thomas Asante isn't far away. And maybe Madja on the other side of the international break. But it feels like a stretch to imagine Madja back at full pelt straight away, doesn't it? So still limited up front, let's be honest, in personnel and options and all of that. Yes, Vyman, yes, young Callum Marshall, who we've hardly seen yet. So I do think it's a stretch to say maximum or even near maximum points, but you make a good point in highlighting those games, to be honest, Alan. You could make a strong case that Albion should expect, in the context of the season as well and the run-in, to win three or four of them and put themselves in a really strong position ahead of having to face, you know, three of the final four games, Johnny, are Sunderland, Leicester and Preston. You know, Preston are right there, aren't they? In and around it. Obviously, Sunderland, maybe not the side they were season ago or so, obviously had problems, but Sunderland, Leicester, Preston for here, the final four, as well as having to go to Sheffield Wednesday, who have, yeah, I know, sort of up and down, but showed some recovery signs. It's perhaps not the most straightforward final four, so here's a, you know, a suggestion of getting the work done in the next five or six.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're good enough. I think the squad's good enough to do it. Whether they will, remains to be seen. I don't think they will. You know, there'll always be tricky games that you're going to go and play. And
yeah.
You look in that, but you look in that run again, taking into context the opposition. You know, like someone like Stoke away. Stoke are scrapping for their lives. They could very well be a League One team next season. You know, and that'd be a travesty for a club like Stoke. You know, of their size, and there's others in there. You know, Bristol City are having an okay season.
Watford,
you know,
up and down with Vardy.
Watford up and down. Millwall has just got a new manager. You know, it's they're not going to be easy, but you know, you'd expect. I would expect Albion to have it sewn up going into the last couple.
Yeah, it's hard to read and call, isn't it? And if it wasn't hard to read and call, we'd all be retired millionaires from accumulators and bookies, won't we? And not on the M1 at 2 a.m. But here we go. There's a few more to get through, Johnny. Cads, as Black Country Cad, has asked, could Kipre get a retrospective ban? This is off the handball on the line. We don't know. He won't, will he? I haven't got exact rules in front of me on retrospective action with that, but from my understanding, no.
Yeah, I don't think he would. I never heard of a player getting a retrospective ban for a handball. I doubt it's even a rule, but don't quote me on that. But yeah.
Well, it's one of those, isn't it, where like if we're in a VAR world, that wouldn't have happened and it had been given and been sent off. But I think this is just like a pre-VAR thing, isn't it? And just the officials have missed it. Unlucky QPR, sort of lucky Albion, really. So no, he's also asked in the same message, Cads, as this is an interesting one that I hope to get more on it in the next few days, actually, or certainly next time I speak with Corbyn, because a few have asked this, but I'll read it from Cads. Why is Ochai always taken off at or around 75 minutes? Is it sports science related? Great question, I think, and very pertinent. There's been a stat doing the rounds this evening, hasn't there, Johnny, about is it goals conceded just after Ochai's taken off in games? Now, I think we all know, everyone here listening knows how important Ochai Okocha is to this Albion side. They're better with him in it. They do better in games with him in it. So to me, and I will ask Carlos this when I get a chance as soon as possible, to me, there's an obvious reason why Okocha is coming off in games. And Carlos always talks about trying to, you know, make subs to make his team better in games and what that he feels the team needs. But for me, if Okocha could hack and handle the 90 minutes and keep going in every game, I don't think he'd come off. Yeah, so I can only see it being physically related, and it will bring you Carlos on that when I can, as I say. But you compare it to Mowat, his partner. Now Carlos has said this week, hasn't he, that Mowat's a warrior, didn't he? He said, and he's got that British mentality. Mowat seems capable of keep going 90 minutes, keep playing, but we just don't see that with Ochai, do we? He has to come off, and to me, it must be a fitness related thing where they're just judging. Ochai's game isn't physical, is it? He's not a. Yeah, that's not his strength. That's not his main trait. And perhaps they're just having to manage his body.
Yeah, maybe. I think as well, he probably wants to rest him a bit. You know,
he's
probably took him off because it's going to be a 3-game week.
But someone like Mowat doesn't need it, clearly.
Probably. We've seen it a few times, haven't we? It took him a long time to get up to speed, but I think it's just one of the unfortunate statistics where. Yeah, it just seems to keep happening, but you know, hopefully it doesn't happen too many times before now and the end of the season.
We've got a quick one in from Rich Downing, a regular listener and tweeter in to the show. When are the media due to meet Shilan Patel? Hopefully soon, Richard. One or two things can't exactly say at the minute regards that, but I'm hoping that it's very soon. And as I said a bit earlier, I think, hope when it happens to be able to bring an interview, something on record to supporters. Obviously, I know that we've got a lot we want to ask him, clearly. So hoping that happens as soon as possible. We'll hope to have some news, as I say, as soon as we can on that. All been well. I know from what I've heard, he's keen to get involved and keen to sort of meet the locals, which is great news for us, obviously. And speak to us, which is again something that never happened at all under Lye, is it? And one thing, I mean, the language barrier with Lai, wasn't there? There are many, many problems, but from what we understand, his English was very, 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 very basic. So straight away, even when he started 2016 at Albion and was over here, the press opportunities were almost next to none, weren't they? Because there was no opportunity there with the language things. But that's a different point altogether. So yeah, we hope as soon as possible with Shillin, and hope to bring you more on that when we can. We've had a few points in, Johnny. I read a couple of these to you just before we started the pod, didn't I? From Baggies 1879. We'll get onto some of his latter points in a bit, but his first question was related to the game at QPR. I was totally against Reach playing left back tonight. Obviously, Adam Reach started in for the injured Connor Townsend, as we said, and I think that was a blow for Albion. I think they missed Townsend, to be honest, as Carlos Corban said actually after the game. He said, I was totally against Reach playing at left back tonight, as seeing his cameos before in that role, and he was totally out of his depth. CC, Carlos Corban admits he got that wrong. And what's the answer for Huddersfield on Sunday? Peters, Pippa, back three. Good question, really. I mean, we've brought the Kyle Bartley update, haven't we, just before going on the pod, and it doesn't sound like Bartley will be ready for Sunday to me. Recurrence of his calf, apparently, going to have a scan. I don't know what you think about that, Johnny. I'll let you take the mic on that. I think Reach, not through effort or anything, probably had a tough night, really, at left back. QPR was strong out wide, particularly on the right. I think when Pippa came on an hour, I don't think he got too much better. So how do you view Huddersfield? Do you see a world where Carlos sticks at a back four with Peters and Peters and Kipra, and I don't know, Reach again at left back, or Pippa at left back, or I don't know what else, possibly move Furlong over and Pippa at right back, or do you think perhaps, obviously we expect Bartley to be unavailable, perhaps go back three, bring Shemi in and have the three of them, and I don't know, Reach more as a left wing back where he's not as reliable in the defensive part of his game? I don't know. It's a conundrum, I think, for Corban over the next 48 hours or so.
Yeah, I don't quite think, just on Adam Reach, I think you said that Corban sort of mentioned Reach and Pepper and, you know, not stopping crosses and stuff, but
for all
the comments, both the goals come from the other flank. So the cross for the field second goal come from the right, the cross for the goal
from Albion's right there,
albeit, you know, came after that sort of penalty shout ish Palmer taking down, I think it was Frey, but I think it was a dive. The goals come from the other side of the field, so I don't think he played a part in them, but he didn't have a fantastic game, Rich, but I thought he did okay. I think he'll stick with what he's done. I fully expect to see Peters again, and I fully expect to see Reach again, because I don't think he'll go to a back five. A back five is more of a defensive system, and I can't see him going and doing that up at Huddersfield, really. I think he'll stick with what he's got.
Carlos's former club, of course, and a first John Smith Stadium return, I think I'm right in saying. So that's sort of the storyline and theme going into Sunday, isn't it? And I know Carlos will probably do his best not to talk about that, but obviously we'll be asking the questions. We're running on, John, so we'll try and fly through a couple. We had one from all Albion fans.
We're 78 miles in the tank, Coxie.
Oh, well, yeah, we're close to running out of petrol, but we'll hope to survive. Is Loftus Road as bad? This is all Albion fans, where you're reporting, as it is in the away end. Improved tonight, actually. There was a new sort of media, sort of loungy suite bit open, but as you will add quickly, Johnny, the press box itself is tight, to say the least, isn't it? To the point where you couldn't actually get out, could you? We were sort of crammed in. You couldn't get out to, as you do towards the end of the games, leave the stadium and go and speak to fans leaving the away end. So that was a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, it was a bit. That's annoyed me almost as much as these 50 mile an hour zones on the M6 and the M1 tonight. But yeah, it's come from all Albion fans, actually. Clint McCormack, big shout out to Clint, who got us a few fan videos in tonight because we couldn't get outside the ground. But yeah, it's quite nice, Loftus. I do like old grounds. Yeah. You know, I'm a fan to an extent of soulless bowls, as I call them, because they're easy to access and the facilities are great. But yeah, it's a bit old fashioned. It's quite small, but yeah, we had some good facilities, good pies, And yeah, it's just, but it is a parking situation as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially on a night game.
20-minute walk.
Yeah. Yeah, back to the Westfield shopping centre we were tonight. But yeah, it's all right, but I can imagine, yeah, it's pretty old-fashioned in the away end.
Johnny talking about being irked by that, being rather irritated by that tight press box and the 50-mile-an-hour speed limits. I will add, if you're interested in booking JD's taxi services, it does come with a bit of a, you know, at times a spiky driver. You know, he can get wound up and lose his head a bit, but he's been seamless on this journey home, Johnny, considering we're in the small hours. So we will plough on. You mentioned Clint McCormack and praised him there, for he has sent one in on his personal account, and that's if they're back at the same time. Would you like to see more out of Maja and Thomas Asante? Maja has looked good from what we've seen, and he's likely to have the bigger upside, but we know BTA can do a job consistently. I think I touched on Maja, didn't I, in saying maybe it'll be a lot to expect so much from him on the back of surgery, lest we not forget, you know, bad ankle ligament injury from Sunderland in December. I think it's tough to expect a lot, but I do think he and Phillips will be back for some April action, hopefully May playoff action, and play a big role. You know, even if Maja isn't starting games, hopefully he'll be ready to come off the bench, and as we saw before his injury, just be around in the positions between the posts to make a difference. You know, he might only need to net one or two goals this season, and they could be the biggest goals in Albion's season, couldn't they? I don't think we need to speak on Thomas Asante, really. I think we could see him back on Sunday, if not Bristol City following Saturday before the international break, and I think we all know what BTA is about, don't we? He's only been out the you know, injured for a couple of weeks, so yeah, the Maja one will be interesting. I think having him and Phillips back from April and beyond for the final month of the season will be absolutely crucial, really, Johnny. Our friend Baggies 1879, we just went away from him, didn't we? Sorry, when he'd asked about Reach playing at left back, he dropped us another note, Johnny. I referenced this to you before we came on air. He in response to you saying we were recording in transit on the way home, he asked, or well, he rather stated, I should say, hope the sound quality is okay in the car. Is this because you're both too lazy to record it tomorrow, or the tight turnaround with the game on Saturday? Well, Baggies 1879, the game's on Sunday, so that's incorrect. And I don't know, Johnny, are we too lazy to do it tomorrow? I mean, it's already tomorrow, it's 2:30 a.m. But yeah, your thoughts on being asked if you're too lazy despite arriving home at 3:30 in the morning?
Give us a break, pal. Christ. My sat nav in front of me here, I'm going to get home at 25 to 4 at this rate. So, yeah, we're bringing you a Baggies broadcast in transit. We've done a sound test, don't worry. We've done a sound test. It sounds perfectly fine. And, yeah, so you've got a Baggies broadcast coming. But, yeah, certainly not too lazy. If you think that, come down here in S Towers. You can come and do a week with us, pal, if you want. But, yeah. Sound quality's fine, don't worry.
We jest about doing this en route home, and you know, I'm sure we could think of more comfortable ways of doing it, but we're glad to do it, and we sort of hope that the listeners, you know, Baggies fans, appreciate just having something to listen to, you know, in the wake of a game, chatting generally about the state of the club, the season, the game itself. Obviously, we're privileged enough to be there, aren't we, reporting on it. So I hope that answers the question, and I hope you do not think we're too lazy to do it tomorrow. We're doing it now, in fact, to allow us to do other things Baggies related tomorrow, aren't we? Coverage. Lord knows what time we'll get into our bed tonight, and Lord knows what time we'll have to wake up in the morning. But there we go. I think, Johnny, we've been through pretty much every question. Baggies Amsterdam, who I read one out earlier, has asked, will the AFL likely take any action against QPR for the projectiles/fan behaviour? I mean, I've seen the elastic band video online where a QPR fan has flung an elastic band. Yeah, I'm not jesting, the type of thing you do in primary and secondary school, you know, like why it's at the football ground. I mean, this is an old guy, you know, he looks middle-aged, 50s. He's flung his elastic band at Cedric Kipra in a second half as Kipra ended up near the home fans. I mean, the mind boggles with that. You were telling me, I didn't quite see it live, that there was bottles thrown. That's the kind of thing, those are the kind of things that get investigated on. I think you said the stewards evicted the bottle launchers, possibly. So hopefully they all, you know, including the mysterious elastic band flinger, get their comeuppance, really.
Yeah, strange one that. I've never seen that in a ground before, but yeah, it was good to see. But you get the odd fan, don't you?
I think that's that, Johnny, for questions. We're on pretty much on the time-ish we like to wrap up. I don't know what any other businesses or the final bits to cover any early thoughts of Huddersfield. But in fact, Johnny, the listeners will know and be able to relate to this. As I speak right now, the Fort Dunlop sign on the right of the M6 we're on now, aren't we, has just appeared. And well, pretty much for the whole of my life driving back to West Bromwich from anywhere south, the sign of the Fort Dunlop means we're almost home, sort of.
You are, I'm not.
Yeah, well, I'm 40 minutes closer than you, but any other business?
Well, yeah, I've just seen spotted Fort Dunlop. I hope we spot a petrol station in a minute, because we'll be on the side of the motorway. But yeah,
Baggy's podcast brought to you from the hard shoulder.
Yeah, I think, just the Huddersfield. I don't mean to must win, but I'll be going there expecting to win. I think Huddersfield got beat again tonight or last night. I just need to keep moving now. I think away from home as well, the form sort of solidified a little bit where, they're 4 unbeaten after. It didn't look like they could buy a win on the road. I know 3 of them have been draws, but they've been draws against pretty good sides. Hull, Ipswich and now Queen's Park Rangers, who took us a little bit by surprise. Just keep moving. And hopefully get 3 points. Hopefully see a Mikey Johnson nutmeg, and hopefully see one wrapped in the top corner again, because we're getting quite used to that now.
Well, cheers, Johnny. I don't particularly want to sign off because it feels totally weird because you always do that. So even though you're at the wheel, I might let you sign off and lead us into the odd boing boing for the end of the pod. Been a pleasure, and we shall do this again next week from a more comfortable team's court, probably, after our trip to Yorkshire on Sunday at lunchtime. And it's been a pleasure. Hope this has been an enjoyable listen, and I'll let you sign us off.
I think we'll keep it simple. See you next time. Boing, boing.
Boing, boing.